every marriage is a duet in need of great backup singers. Mm. And we tell people, you don't need a choir, mm-hmm. but you do need backup singers. And the first thing you need to do is just talk through or list out all of the voices speaking in to your marriage. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, and you can all do that individually, but then come together as a couple and decide, these are backup singers. Who do we need to turn down? Mm-hmm. Who do we need to mute? There's a lot of mutes on that list.
Yeah.
And then find that one or two couples that you need to turn way up.
Welcome to the Loving God, Loving People podcast, where we talk about what it looks like to follow Jesus in our everyday lives and how, in the end, all that matters is God and people. Here's today's episode.
Well, hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm sitting here with Ted Cunningham. Ted, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. You are in town doing a comedy date night. Tell me real quick and tell us, how did you get into the comedy date night scene? How did that begin for you?
Yeah, I refused that title for a very long time because I'd rather go in and just do, you know, seminar content and mm-hmm. then be like, oh, this guy actually is can be humorous. But I was at an event. And they hired a comedian, and then I was going to be the marriage speaker at the end of this date night. And the comedian bombed. It was really, rough. And the pastor comes up to me afterwards, and he said, well, we didn't need to hire that guy. We could have just went with you. And I said, all right, I'll go ahead and take it. So I think it was about 5 years ago, I said, I'll go with comedian. All you have to do to consider it comedy, they told me, was 3 to 5 laughs a minute.
Okay.
If you get 3 to 5 laughs a minute, mm-hmm. it's considered comedy. If you get, you know, a laugh or two, you're probably more of a humorist, or if you tell a story with the funny punchline or ending. So, yeah.
So you went ahead and crossed over that line, because it would definitely be better to be the seminar speaker who surprises everybody with how funny they are, as opposed to the funny guy that everyone's got this high expectation, he's going to make me laugh, and now you got this bar that's way high, and you got to hit that every time.
And then you turn it into a seminar. That's nothing right. worse than turning a comedy night into a conference.
All right. So tell us a little bit about yourself. So you're married, kids, kind of what's all your stats that people
typically? Yeah, my wife and I just celebrated 25 years of marriage.
Wow.
We met at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia on a blind date.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of blind dates. Our friend set us up, and we were married in 1996, and we have two kids. My daughter just got married.
Okay.
She and her new husband, Caden, they live in Branson near us, and my son, he's getting ready to head off to college as well. So we're soon to be in the empty nest season.
All right.
We started Woodland Hills Family Church just over 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we started it, we asked the Lord, hey, let us stay here. Let this be the place we serve. Mm-hmm. And so my primary focus in life is local church pastor. And then I have a lot of fun traveling and doing the comedy thing for the sole point. I don't just go to clubs and do comedy. I don't mm-hmm. do fundraising comedy. I'm primarily 95% of the time with couples, and I love helping couples learn what it means to enjoy life together, how to experience high levels of marital satisfaction.
So talk to us a little bit about the connection between humor and healthy marriages, because there's something about laughing together and all of that. What have you kind of learned, and why is that important, or why is that a key part of your ministry is helping people laugh and kind of loosen up?
Yeah, well, I mean, the research shows, if you were to go study just laughter, the benefits of laughter, humor, not just in marriage but in relationships, it boils down to this simple idea. Couples who use laughter to manage stress and work through difficult conversations, they report high levels of marital satisfaction, mm-hmm. and they stay together longer.
Okay.
They just learned how to lighten up. I was sharing this with a young man the other day who's been dating for 4 years, and he plans on dating another 4 or 5 years before they get married. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, that's a pretty long dating time. That's 8, 9 years. That's a long time. And I said, let me tell you what's probably already happening. See, if you date a year, you're engaged 6 months a year, and then you get married after knowing each other maybe 2 years. I said, you have these lighter moments in marriage that I call no big deal moments. Mm-hmm. There's no big deal. You just got to let them go. Overlook the offense, mm-hmm. you know, and let it be, a moment of joy in your marriage. I said, what I've noticed with couples who date for long periods of time mm-hmm. without getting married is those no big deal moments turn into deal breakers. Mm-hmm. And they see it as, oh, we're not compatible. And we see it after being married 17 yep. years, 25 years. And no, this is just, this is small, let it go. But I want to take it one step further than that, I don't want to just let it go. I think you can actually have fun with it. Yeah. You can learn to laugh at it. And if anything I have discovered 2 years after this pandemic started is not only do we as a nation need to lighten up little, not only as a church do we need to lighten up a little bit, but couples need to lighten up.
Yeah.
And we're taking ourselves too seriously. And so find those no big deal moments throughout the day and have fun with them rather than go at each other's throat.
Yeah.
It's a
yeah.
decision. Marital satisfaction is a choice. It's not something you wait for. It's something you decide.
That's good. That's good. So many people, they look at that conflict or they look at whatever and they go, oh, I just want to avoid it. I just want to not have to deal with it. But the intimacy, the enjoyment is on the other side. And I can't count how many times we've gone through conflict. And then it's funny in hindsight.
Right.
Once we've worked through it, now we can tell the story about that one time we were really frustrated. We were really upset. And we almost laugh about it every time because it's like, man, we were
so
ridiculous.
You just gave a pro-husband tip right there because when I just said couples who use laughter to manage stress and work through difficult conversations. I always like to remind husbands to use laughter to work through difficult conversations. Timing is everything.
Yeah.
And you're like, when do I know it's the right time? Oh, she'll let you know. Okay. And it may not be funny right now, but a month from now, 2 months from now, it's just, to me, marriage is fun when we can get good at those moments and just shake our head and say, can't believe I said that.
Yeah.
I can't believe I just did that. And just let it go.
Yeah.
Lighten up and let it go.
Okay. So for the couple who's listening or the individual, maybe you're in a dating relationship or whatever, maybe one day you're going to be in a marriage and you're evaluating, you're going, okay, we don't laugh a lot. What are steps a couple can take, an individual can take if that's not present currently in the marriage? How do you start working on that? How do you actually start developing
that? So every
that?
Couple has a shared sense of humor.
Okay.
And it's different for every couple. And this is why it's why the online dating sites are trying to figure out how do you measure that laughter? Because everybody says, I want someone with a sense of humor.
Yep.
But a sense of humor and a shared sense of humor is not about joke telling. It's not about learning how to write a joke or deliver a punchline and get your timing down. That's not at all what we mean by a shared sense of humor. We mean for you and your wife, you will find lines in movies funny that I don't. There'll be moments that we have that we look at each other like, I relate to that. And so that becomes part of our shared sense of humor. And one of the first steps you can take in discovering your shared sense of humor, if you've been in a season of dry bones, is stop trying to be funny and just start looking for it. It's everywhere. And it's everywhere you go. That observational humor. One of the things I'll share tonight at Date Night Comedy is I find it in the grocery store all the time. And that new Coca-Cola, I don't know if you've seen it here, but it's out in the Midwest, but maybe it's in Phoenix. Maybe you don't need it in Phoenix, but we need it in the Ozarks. But it's just, they take up a third of the Coca-Cola box and it says 12-pack. I mean, probably 150 size font. It's huge. It says 12-pack. And right below it, it says, or it says 15-pack. And right below it, it says 3 cans more than a 12-pack. So they're like doing math on the side of the box. And maybe Phoenix is, you know, really well together with it. But see, just even your chuckle there, you get that. And I'm walking by that in the grocery store. I'm not writing humor. I'm just on the lookout for it. It was worth it for me to grab that and take it a couple aisles over and go, Amy, did you see this? You remember when your math teacher said, show your work? Coca-Cola, somebody complained and Coca-Cola has to show their work. My wife has a silent patriotic laugh. When she finds something funny, she places her hand over her heart. She leans forward and nothing comes out. And I go for it every single day. Do I get it every day? No. But showing her that Coca-Cola 15-pack in the grocery store, she looked at it and I got maybe not even what you just gave. I got a, and then right back to grocery shopping, but it was worth it for me. And I just think we let those moments, you know, slide. This is just yesterday. This is, we haven't ever talked about this, Amy and I don't think, but I pulled out the silverware drawer at home and I'm like, what, where's all our forks? They're not anywhere. How do we lose, how does a family lose forks? Can we discuss this for a minute? I get losing socks, but I go, they're not laying around the house in random places. They're not in the sink, in the dishwasher, or in the drawer. And we're sitting there scratching our heads. And just these moments of, and I just said, I go, maybe we should check the lint trap. I don't know. Do these end up in our clothes and end up in the dryer? But these daily interactions that we sometimes think, just speak it when you see it. I mean, and it's simple. It's the no big deal moments. And so I would even say, because you'll have a couple right now that's that's watching or listening in crisis, and they'll be like, we're not in the mood for that. This is at the end. I want to say, well, keep this in mind. Marital satisfaction is a decision. It's something you look for and you go after. It's not something you wait for. It's not something you hope you find. And you're never going to just stumble into it. You're never going to. And here's, couples are like, well, we can't do it. I would just encourage you, even a couple in a difficult spot right now, you know, your mind can tell the difference between fake and real laughter, but your body can't. And laughter and humor is such a great stress reliever, reduces tension in a relationship. I think even in difficult seasons and stages, we can find ways to use laughter and humor to cope. And it builds. It truly is like a yawn. It's contagious. And if you've ever walked into a room and people are laughing, you don't even need to know what was said. No story, no joke. You move toward it. And you catch yourself laughing. You don't even know anything going on, but it just builds. And that's why I encourage couples, and there'll be couples tonight. I mean, this is a sold out event Sun Valley's doing. There'll be couples in difficult seasons and stages in their marriage that are there tonight. And I hear this all the time. When they leave, they'll say things like, I can't remember the last time we laughed like that. And when they say that to me, I'm like, well, don't let it end here. This is just a catalyst. This is just the beginning. Don't go out and do this. Find time. And it should be a reminder to you, this is probably something you did early on. You know, and what was natural early on, you need to be intentional with it later on. And laughter is something... You know, everybody, you know, they're looking for it. Everybody says, want someone with a sense of humor. You laugh together. It was easy. It was like breathing. And here's the cool thing about this factor or skill of marriage is if you'll be intentional with this, it can feel natural again, even in a difficult season or stage.
Yeah, that's so good. And I hope if you're in a tough place, you're writing this down or you're making a mental note, you know, make that person... Maybe laugh once a day is a goal. You know, find something. And if, you know, things are going great, don't lose it. Lose that
avoid
habit.
Yep.
One of the things I used to tell Lindsay this, I said, hey, my goal is to make you laugh once a day.
Like,
it's an easy goal. Yeah. It's not lofty. She didn't have to laugh all the time. Sometimes she laughs like in spite of, you know, like it's because I'm being ridiculous. And to your point, you start to learn after a while what makes them laugh. Yeah. What are the things that they love? My wife loves ridiculousness. Like the more foolish I am, just being goofy around her, the more funny she finds
it. Well, and that's another skill. You just said that if you can laugh at yourself and invite your spouse into that, that's gold right there.
Yeah. So be looking for those things and be a student. Be a learner of, you know, maybe start putting that filter on of anytime you hear them laugh or see them smile, ask yourself why. What was it? What was it about that moment? And then you can start to replicate that. You mentioned a little bit online dating, so I want to shift gears here. The world has changed drastically in a very short amount of time, and relationships seem to form differently. Relationships look different than they did, you know, 50, 20 years ago even. How have you seen kind of the new scene of dating affecting marriage? I'm going kind of in a deep, I told you we're shifting gears, but as you, because I talked to a lot of young adults, a lot of people that are, you know, they're meeting people online now. That's kind of the new platform where you meet people. How does that affect marriages and what are some things to maybe lean into that are good about that? Because there's going to be positive things. And what are some things to maybe avoid when it comes to kind of the current dating scene and how that affects relationships?
Yeah. So one of the trends that I think shocks all of us is, you know, the fastest growing dating site, Match.com, it was up until, you know, in the last few years, online dating is for everyone. It's for all ages. When we think online dating, we think millennials, we think Gen Z, you know, but it is everyone. And I've found for any of my senior adult friends that are listening, we have had so many cases in our church, and I know it's going to be true of Sun Valley because it's true of every church where people have been catfished. And so what I tell folks across the board, if you're 20 years old on an online dating site or you're 70 years old, meet face-to-face, and that can be Zoom, as soon as possible. This sounds terrible, but that's the first caution I give these days because you have to know it's a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the more you can see the nonverbals too, I mean, now you're getting into relationship development. You don't need to rush, but you can avoid the unnecessary delay as well. Mm-hmm. Keeping in mind when we're dating, whether online or in person, we tend to focus on similarities. Mm-hmm. We build up similarities. Yep. And isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? Yeah, we have that in common, and we downplay differences. Mm-hmm. Within 2 to 3 years after marriage, it flips.
Yep.
Yeah, we don't even think about our similarities. We have to be reminded of those, and we shine the spotlight on our differences.
Yep.
And so the more you can work through difficult topics, mm-hmm. issues, mm-hmm. differences while dating, the better, right? Because we know marriage is just a magnifier of everything that takes place in mm-hmm. dating and engagement. And so – I think the other thing we have a difficult time with in dating today is knowing the difference between character, chemistry, and competency. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing, the deal breaker, is character.
Yeah.
Okay. Chemistry, there are some personality blends that may be easier than others, but I'm if you've studied the Enneagram, I'm an 8. My wife's an 8. We make it work. Mm-hmm. I have a 7 wing. She has a 9 wing, but you know, it you can bring people of two very different temperaments together. So don't let chemistry be the deal breaker. Character is the deal breaker. Mm-hmm. And even competency, what a person does. I try to explain, you know, character is how hard a person works. Mm-hmm. Competency is what type of work the person does. And so I when I think about a person who has their list, it's written or just mental of who they're looking for. And a boyfriend, a girlfriend, or a spouse.
Oh, I remember those days in youth ministry. Yeah. You're going to map it out.
Yeah. Just make sure you know, because I just see some people that share their list with me, or I just pick it up in conversation. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you've just shared like 4 things that are deal breakers for you that I don't think are deal breakers in relationships, because mm-hmm. it's chemistry and it's competency and it's even calling in life, but it's the character mm-hmm. that you want to look at. I always tell young couples, you have to spend time around your parents, because you want to see how he or she treats their parents.
Yeah.
Respect for authority begins at home. And you just want to be able to see, is there honor there? And even if they have a difficult relationship with their parents, you know, how do they navigate, you know, those waters? Because if a storm hits your marriage early on, you can rest assured it's going to be similar as far as the responses and the reactions and the attitudes that we bring into it.
Awesome. I never know when I ask a question if there's going to be an answer on the other side. So I'm glad, because we shifted gears hard to the online dating thing. So I'm thrilled with that answer. I think that's super helpful for a lot of people that are in that scene. I want to talk about when it comes to, you just mentioned that honor and the character and all of that. One of the things that I was most attracted to when I started dating Lindsay, when we first met, is she always had people speaking into her life. She mm-hmm. always had mentors. She was always learning and growing in her character and seeking it out. There's a lot of couples I feel like that they try and solve everything just the two of them. And mm-hmm. on the outside, everything looks good in the marriage. Everything looks good in the relationship and the way they interface with people, but they don't let anybody speak into the marriage. What advice do you have for that? And how does somebody who's maybe in that situation where they haven't sought counsel, or that hasn't been a regular practice for them, where they'll take input from godly others or a counselor or godly other couples? And how do you break down that wall without, for lack of a better term, oversharing or over inviting into the relationship dynamics?
Yeah. So we're in Branson, Missouri, which is like live country music capital of the world. So this word picture.
I didn't know that.
Man, you look like a country music guy. All right. So this is for all the country fans out there. So we say at our church, and it works, every marriage is a duet in need of great backup singers. Mm. And we tell people, you don't need a choir, mm-hmm. but you do need backup singers. And the first thing you need to do is just talk through or list out all of the voices speaking in to your marriage. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, and you can all do that individually, but then come together as a couple and decide, these are backup singers. Who do we need to turn down? Mm-hmm. Who do we need to mute? There's a lot of mutes on that list.
Yeah.
And then find that one or two couples that you need to turn way up and then be intentional about it. Like tell them, hey, we love going on a double date with you. We love meeting for breakfast or dinner. We laugh a lot together. We enjoy similar activities. Can we take it just one step further? Can we just take it a little bit down the road and maybe just these few questions, just asking, you know, how you're doing, how we're doing. We would love to be backup singer to your duet, if that's something. We get this from the Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 4, where the daughters of Jerusalem are the backup singers to Solomon, the Shulamite woman. And I love this text. It says, "We rejoice and delight in you. We will praise your love more than wine." And it's not hard to find that jaded coworker, that bitter person to speak into your marriage. You know, the they're going to probably be the loudest voice. A great backup singer is rejoicing, delighting, and praising the love of your marriage. And they are And first thing, to be a great backup singer, you need to advocate for the couple, not just the spouse. So, you know, Amy and I, we talk about this often, but finding couple friends can be very difficult. You know, it's a challenge that we hear from couples all the time. You know, the two wives are friends, but the husbands don't really click, or vice versa. And so when you find that couple that you both click with, rejoice and delight in them, invite them to rejoice and delight in you. And because I think sometimes when we talk about accountability, it's like just all these hard questions. Has he, you know, but I think sometimes you just need that couple.
The bright light shining on you.
Yeah, you just need the couple cheering you on, saying, "Hey, you got this and we're here for you." And our, I mean, it's, you know how texting keeps track of your conversations in the top. And it's always in the top three conversations, the four of us just constantly going back. Our backup singers actually have spent the last 6 years in the Netherlands. They're moving to India for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
He's with the Foreign Service and— man, it's been something, but we're just as encouraged by them, and we try to encourage them just as much, even though we're oceans apart.
Yeah, one of the things that my wife and I did on, along those lines is we started looking at different areas, and you brought up Song of Solomon, so let's talk about sex. My wife and I, we were talking about, okay, we have different desires as far as you know, level of desire and all that, and a lot of couples experience that where one, you know, is wanting more than the other person, and how do you navigate all that? And so it wasn't that we had a couple that we were, you know, in small group together that we were, you know, super connected, but there was a couple that we said, hey, they have a really healthy marriage, they're older than us, let's take them out to dinner and let's just get wisdom on this topic. Hey, how have you guys navigated this? And, you know, when it comes to figuring out communication and what's going to work and all of that. And so I think there's some couples that maybe go, I don't know who that other couple is, but you know of somebody that would do dinner with you guys.
Right.
And at least you can get some of that wisdom. Talk about, because I'm not going to share everything that came out of that conversation, but it was incredibly helpful for my wife and I. Talk about sexual intimacy now in couple relationships, because, you know, we're on the podcast. I have you here.
Yeah.
So
but before I want to get into that, I do want to mention, you mentioned an older couple, but I also do not overlook the widows and widowers in your church who, I mean, I meet with an 88-year-old widow in our church often who lost her husband 35 years ago.
Wow.
Never remarried, and her name's Pat Kershaw, and I mean, she just and it's so healing for her to talk about Max when we meet. And Amy and I love, I think sometimes when we think backup singers, we think, you know, it's got to be another couple.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of singles, for the singles listening, you can be a backup singer if you've never been married. You can rejoice and delight in another couple, and encourage them with sexual intimacy. So you know, this is part of my punchlines that I often share, but I grew up in an independent, fundamental, premillennial, King James Version only Baptist church. And I say the message we got on sex growing up was sex is dirty, nasty, and ugly. You should save it for the one you love.
Yep.
Right. So, and a lot of people relate to that. Grew up in homes and churches that never talked about this subject. And you're like, well, yeah, we get that. But here's why that is so important. That wrote a message on your heart. And if Proverbs 4:23 says, guard your heart, it's the wellspring of life. That means every word and every action we speak flows from the heart. What you believe about sex is the first thing you need to discuss as a couple. Because that's where all of your time together in the bedroom flows from. That's where it starts.
In the beliefs.
In the beliefs. Yeah. Because I was embarrassed. I felt like a pervert early in our marriage when I would initiate sex. It just didn't feel right. Because you can't grow up for 20, 22 years in a home that never talks about it. This is where the church got it pretty off on this, where they think, well, the wedding flips a switch.
Yeah.
And you're ready to go. Yeah. No, you're not. You haven't been discipled in this area. And so early on in marriage, Amy's like, is there something wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
Let's know. And that, because if you're not having that conversation, so start with the beliefs and let the beliefs grow into a conversation. Because 90%, according to sex therapist Michael Seitzma out of Atlanta, Wesleyan pastor turned sex therapist, he says 90% of the bedroom problems are relationship issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's physical issues. There's biological issues. We have things that we have mm-hmm. to work through, medical issues, mental health issues. He goes, 90% is relationship, because mm-hmm. the bedroom is a barometer of the marriage. And so for us, I mean, we were, I would say, 7 years into marriage before we started having conversations about it.
Yeah.
And so that's where it starts. Understand your beliefs and what it's driving, and then have the conversation. We actually created here, while we were in Phoenix 12 years ago, a menu with 52 questions on it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can get that and tag it or bring it into the church website. Behind many firewalls is what I tell people. Put it behind a few firewalls, because there's 52 questions that just help couples in this conversation mm-hmm. related to frequency,
mm-hmm.
as you just address, how often should a married couple have sex,
mm-hmm.
Then performance,
mm-hmm.
what can we do to bring creativity into the bedroom
mm-hmm.
without bringing anything from the world into the bedroom, without if a spouse is dealing with trauma, we don't want to re-traumatize
yep.
a spouse. So that's important questions, and that covers everything from, you know, frequency, but then performance can be time of day for some, you know, morning or afternoon or evening. Endurance, how long should lovemaking be? Like, we shouldn't have, you know, quickies as the steady diet. Like, we need to prepare for this and plan for this and prepare one another for this
mm-hmm.
On days that we plan physical intimacy. So having that conversation is key, and it will just open up people free. But now the key to that, so you're talking beliefs, you're talking a conversation. I would also say it has to be safety.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I give this list out to couples that I work with 52 questions, I have them look at it individually first, and circle questions they are open to answering.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if we don't know what trauma's been in the
yep.
person's life or what their sexual past is, and they may say, "Oh, that question is way too
yep.
graphic, too personal. I'm not ready." Well, that's a statement of safety.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel safe enough, even if I've been married for 20 years. I don't
yep.
feel safe answering that. And again, we're talking about such a personal issue, and we can take it so personally, but we're talking about the heart.
Yeah.
And you want to know what's in the heart of your spouse
yeah.
before you just go at mm-hmm. just the behaviors and the methods in the bedroom. So talk beliefs, have the conversation, practice safety, and then let this be a free expression. And Amy and I, we say this often, at 25 years of marriage, I am not Red Lobster's fresh catch of the day. 100% get that. But we enjoy intimacy now at 25 years of marriage that we weren't even close to experiencing mm-hmm. this level of enjoyment in our early years of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's truly when the Bible talks about one flesh marriage, it's talking about, yes, it's talking about a husband and a wife being naked, being physical, body to body. But it's also so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's when the relational, the emotional, the spiritual, all of it comes together, and you look at your spouse and you're like, I feel 100% safe with that person.
Yeah.
And now I'm open. And that's intimacy. Right? We define intimacy from years back, being fully known
mm-hmm.
and fully accepted. Well, think of that in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your desire is clearly stated. For some, it'll be 3 times a week. For others, once a week, or maybe 3 times a month. I mean, those conversations are so important, but know they have deeper roots
yeah.
than just the behavior.
All right. You're a wealth of knowledge. I keep interviewing you for forever here. I have one more tough question for you, and then we'll end on something lighter here. For those who maybe had that same upbringing and mm-hmm. they're thinking is rooted in something that's just a little bit off when it comes to intimacy, what would you say is a biblical, healthy foundation when it comes to how we view sex and how we think about sex? If you could basically replace that 22 years of upbringing and say, I would replace it with this. What is this?
Yeah. So to me, once Amy and I started having the conversation, and I mean, for a week, she wanted to have this conversation once. She was reading a book on how men think, mm-hmm. and I remember, and it was making her mad. The mm-hmm. book was making her mad. And I just was like, oh, shaking my head. And she goes, we need to talk about this. Well, I resisted for a week. Again, because I felt what I thought and what I felt. I mean, I felt this about my body. I thought there was something dirty mm-hmm. about me and experiencing sexual pleasure. There's just something really wrong or perverted about that. So once we started to have the conversation and understand God's plan for it, you know, Song of Solomon 5:1, drink your fill, O lovers. Like, enjoy this. Spend more time with it. For us, we replaced it with more of a biblical foundation than the traditional foundation. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us, especially in the evangelical church today, we have a tradition of teaching on sex mm-hmm. and intimacy that maybe we need to spend just more time. I mean, the Song of Solomon is a great book to start, you know, to understand. Chapters 1 and 2 is that dating and courting, and you get safety in there. You get kind words spoken mm-hmm. over, mm-hmm. you know, your spouse's beauty. You see that sex doesn't start in the bedroom, you know. So for us, we did the work outside of the bedroom first, and it changed everything about the bedroom for us.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, if you say, what did you say, replace it with this, in its simplest form, we took the lies written upon our heart, mm-hmm. sex is dirty, nasty, and ugly, save it for the one you love, or there's something dirty and shameful about my body. I mean, those are all lies, mm-hmm. right? So we went and we wanted to find the truth. Mm-hmm. To write over those lies. That's why memorization and meditation of scripture is so important. So we meditate on that, and we know now what the truth is, and now we're sharing it with one another, and it changes everything about the experience once we change the heart.
Yeah. Oh, man. So good. Thank you so much for sharing wisdom. And I know there's a wealth more, and I'm excited that Sun Valley and Ted Cunningham, we're working together at Comedy Date Night and building this relationship. So my wife and I, we kind of have our like go-to Netflix show at the end of the day when we're, you know, if we're tired or whatever, like, hey, let's just unwind. What's your and Amy's like go-to that you
You're
guys could
die.
Watch?
It's not Netflix.
Okay.
We love watching Life Below Zero.
Okay.
You know what that show is?
No.
It's
is this a documentary on like Antarctica or something?
It's on Alaska.
Okay.
Okay. I want to be – there's one woman that lives in the most northern part of the United States.
Okay.
Her name is Sue. She's at Kavik River Camp. It's just her. She's the farthest runway away, and Amy just looks at me. And this is a pastor trying to escape people.
Yeah, I think
that's why I watch it at night. I'm like, let's move to Alaska.
Yeah.
I'll just fish for salmon. We'll eat salmon every day. They put their nets out and they catch salmon and they go get their elk and their moose and their caribou. And I mean, it's reality TV, but it follows like four or five different families or individuals around Alaska and how they live nomadically. And gotta be honest, Robert, there are times at the end of
Sounds
the day
awesome.
We're just like, let's go move to Alaska. Yeah. Not just Alaska. That one place up there where only you and I can live.
It's too crowded. Sue's already up there.
And she don't want nobody coming
Yeah, you
up.
Need to find another place.
So that's our show.
Life Below Zero.
What's yours?
I love it. Well, we tend to watch like The Office or Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Something that's kind of just, you know, funny and goofy. And those are kind of our go-tos. But it's funny that you say that. Chad always tells me, he's like, sometimes like if we're outdoors and we're like once in a while, he's like, I just want to be a cowboy. I hear him say that all the time. I just want to be a cowboy.
Chad could be a fly fishing guide in Montana.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
He could do it.
I love it. Well, Ted, thanks so much for taking time. And,
well, this
and,
is great.
Yeah,
thanks
being on the podcast
me.
With us. Excited for the road ahead.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Loving God, Loving People podcast. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast wherever you are listening so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this conversation, we'd love it if you rated the podcast and left us a review. Also, sharing this with a friend is a great way to help more people meet, know, and follow Jesus. And lastly, you are always welcome to join us online for one of our services every week at live.sv.cc or go to locations.sv.cc to join us in person at one of our physical locations. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.